100. We made it. I can't believe we made it. It's been such an amazing, insightful, fun ride. I'm so glad you guys have all been along with it with me. And we're growing faster than ever. I just looked at the numbers. We're up 190% year over year. And that is all thanks to you. So what we wanted to do for this one was try to like bring it all together. So we're going to break it down, bring in all the best stuff, all the best themes, all the best guests so that you can have it all in one listen. Let's look at the numbers. So we've had 41 founders, 34 CEOs, 15 CMOs, 3 chief brand officers, 1 chief digital officer, 8 presidents, 8 VPs, 13 directors, 6 investors, and 5 creators. And on top of that, they've come from brands that, frankly, when I started this, I didn't think we'd have this level of quality. It's pretty wild. Rare Beauty, Gucci, Mr. Beast, Gymshark, Revolve, TikTok, Instagram, K18, Olaplex, Aloe Yoga, Mac, Too Faced, Benefit, Elf, Estee Lauder, Amazon, Live Nation, Microsoft, Reddit, North Face, American Eagle. And that is just the start. And we're going to keep going. So again, huge thank you guys for being such great supporters throughout this journey. We are so excited to go from 100 to 200. And remember, if you enjoy this, be a friend, tell a friend. That is the best way you can help out. And thanks again for celebrating this milestone with us.
Explore the minds and marketing strategies behind today's winning brands and businesses. Tap into the power of the creator economy with Earned by Creator IQ. Here's Connor Begley.
We've been so lucky to have some of the best influencer marketers in the world from some of the most iconic brands on this show. One of my favorite parts about this show is I get to go out and ask some of the people I think are the smartest influencer marketers in the world the questions that you never get to ask people. And I think one of the things that really emerged as part of this process was the idea of long-term mutually beneficial relationship building. And it's something that I talk about all the time, but when I hear people say it again and again and again and again, and the people that I just really respect, it's just something that's really reinforced the way that I think about things. So I'm going to let you hear from them. You'll hear from some of our earliest guests, Mehdi Mehdi, the chief digital officer at Rare Beauty, who previously was part of the rocket ship that was NYX. It got acquired for $500 million, followed by Callum Watson, the global partnerships director at Gymshark, which got invested in at $1.5 billion valuation. And then finally, you'll hear from Lee Stimmel, the head of partnerships at Amazon Studios. Let's take a listen.
I think starting off with it, you have to respect what they do and what they're going through, because that's probably one of the hardest jobs you can have. And I know people downplay it. It's like, oh, you're posting on Instagram.
It's a lot of work to get in there.
Yeah, they're consumed 24/7 with what exactly you need to be posting and on every channel. And you can go into your job and be like, you know what, I'm not feeling great today. I'm gonna kind of coast a little bit. They don't get to do that. They have to be on all the time, posting content, thinking of what the next piece of content is going to be. So, I really respect what they go through, and at the same time, they don't have necessarily the stability of like a steady paycheck. They don't know from day to day how YouTube is going to change the way they get compensated, or how brands decide how they're going to get compensated, or how, there's so much up in the air in their lives. So I think it helps when you approach them with that knowledge of what they struggle with and then work with them in a way that I think helps them. That's always the approach that we've taken is, of course, you can throw money at them and that's great, but you build a longer term relationship by saying, hey, how can I help you outside of, paying you for this content? What can I do to help you, with other projects that you're working on, for example? I think that matters a lot to them, and that's what's been helpful to building some of these longer lasting relationships.
When you work with influencers, you're working with people. And I think a lot of businesses and companies don't necessarily understand or realize that. You know what I mean? I think a lot of companies, when it comes to influencer marketing, it's very transactional, and it's we pay you X, you do Y, and that's not how we do things at Gymshark. You know what I mean? It's all about it's a mutually beneficial partnership. It's what can we do to help you and give you value of you being associated with Gymshark. You know what I mean? What can we do to help you? And equally, I mean, this is how we see you helping us as a brand. So it's making sure that as the landscape gets more and more competitive, it's how do we constantly evolve our offering and keep close relationships with all of our athletes, because how do we keep offering value to them? How do we help them set up their own businesses, help them with their personal branding, giving them opportunities, camera equipment, all that sort of stuff? So it's always just constantly, how can we keep offering value to the people we work with and staying ahead of the curve as well? Because it's one of those things. There's a lot of companies out there that will look to Gymshark as to what are they doing, what are they going to do next. So I say that's the other thing, is staying ahead of the curve, keeping your ears to the ground, and constantly pivoting when you need to.
I saw this white space of influence that I mentioned before, of like, we really need to look at this group of creatives in a way of like, how do we bring them into our orbit and work with them, get to know them, communicate, and the next incredible director or writer or photographer is going to come out of this pool. And when I say pool, I don't mean the pool, I mean that universe, which is obviously, as you know better than anyone, somewhat infinite at this point. But the talent really does rise. You see kind of like these incredibly talented people in their mediums. And so my feeling is like, well, how do we not tap into these people and elevate their work, or at least help them bring them to more audience? Again, the idea of fandom, right? How do we bring fans to them? How do we increase their business? That can go from selling something to Amazon, or it could be just helping them, give them exposure so they double their followers and therefore can command a bigger footprint within the universe. That's all wins for me. Like, as I said before, this guy with the movie camera, we found him relatively young because he was working with Maisel and the Maisel cast. And we brought him into our fold for a bunch of things. And now he's like all over the place doing stuff for all different streamers. And someone said to me, well, are you upset? That he's like, of course not. I love the fact that he's flourishing. And that's what I want. I want him and like all of the creators we work with to flourish. And
because then they're like, if you work with Amazon, look what could happen for you. Correct. Right? Like, that's the story you want them telling each other.
Correct.
Community building and retention are topics that I just beat to death, but it's only because they are so, so, so important. And I think in a world in which creators are receiving box after box after box from companies and message after message and DM after DM, I think being able to stand out through authenticity ends up being one of the most important elements when it comes to building a really impressive creator marketing program or influencer marketing program. And obviously, from a data-driven perspective, retention is the biggest predictor of success long-term, biggest predictor of growth. And so we'll listen to some of the best at doing this. Sarah Lee and Christine, the co-founders of Glow Recipe, Samantha Sichel, the head of social product and digital innovation at Live Nation, and Michelle Miller, the SVP of marketing at K18, who previously did it at Kosas and at Too Faced prior to that. Anyways, have some fun. These are great ones.
From the very beginning of when we were trying to get the word out about Glow Recipe, we tried to reach out to all of these influencers that we were personally following, but also we knew had, you know, a lot of influence mm-hmm. in the industry. We did a lot of research, and because we were following some of them, we understood, you know, what type of skin concerns they had or what they were interested in or what they were talking about recently. So we could actually customize our communication and, for example, our email or this gift, you know, that we had as a seed to these influencers were customized to each and every influencer that we reached out to. So that was, I mean, that was the very beginning of our business. And I would say Christine and I mean, we spent 2 weeks without sleeping properly because we were so passionate to do this. And it was, you know, the way at that time that we could think of that could, you know, get our name out there. So, and then from there, I think we were able to build relationships because we take each and every sort of response with a lot of, you know, gratitude. So we wanted to, you know, continue to have this conversation with them. You know, if some of the influencers lived in LA or, you know, some other state, whenever we traveled, we would take the time to grab coffee or breakfast with each and every person as a thank you, but also to keep them posted and updated with what we're up to, and share the products. And I think a lot of them that we, you know, built relationships from day one are now friends of the brand. Some of them are genuinely passionate about our philosophy and the formulations mm-hmm. that we create. And they really support us. So we created this, you know, really nice network of friends, I would say, who have, you know, similar interests, basically to support one another, and similar passion, which is beauty and skincare. And we genuinely talk about it online, sometimes through, you know, Instagram live chats or DMs on personal levels, or just, you know, whenever they have a product feature moment, they would talk about us. I think that's kind of built over time. And I think that's, again, mm-hmm. an organic approach, but it was built over time. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. You really have to build and cherish and nurture these relationships and continue to follow up and make sure that you have, you know, personal FaceTime with a lot of these people. And that was our strategy.
we can place these creators in these unbelievable Money Can't Buy live event experiences, not just once, but once a week, right? Totally. So it's like you have the best night of your life every single week. Of course they're going to want to do this, right? So that's the secret sauce. And then really smart brands are coming along for the ride. Has it been successful for us? Yes, because the creators truly love live entertainment. We've done a lot of research to make sure that these are the right people who would truly value an experience like this. So we provide room and board, this access, festival trips, right? So just this past weekend, everyone in the Last Sleep House, most of the creators went to Lollapalooza, right? Yeah. And they got Coinbase. So they collected NFTs and got access to the side stage viewing platform and highlighted the fact that that's available to fans, right? Yeah. And they were this amplification tool really for the brand. But they just were having fun and seeing Sabrina Carpenter side stage, right?
Yeah.
It's just putting them in natural situations and having them share their moments. That's why their fans connect with them. They're authentic in their content. They're highlighting it. Lauren Gibson in the house, she's a really fantastic dancer. And so she's dancing with her product and it makes sense.
Yeah.
They're just doing what they naturally do and it works really well for us.
I think before a brand can make a big investment, it's really about fostering your community and especially your niche community. So, you know, with K18, we really started with hairstylists and creating our, you know, our core community of hairstylists that love K18. And for us, you know, we had to first find these people because K18 was a completely unknown brand. So the first thing we started with was, hey, you know, try it. We knew if the hairstylist tried it, they would love it. So before we went into bigger things like ROI, we really built our core community, which drives, I would say, 40% of our earned media value. And that's huge for a brand that's in the top three in hair EMV, right? So our core community is driving that. So when we think about bigger activations, it's what's going to build brand love? Is there something special that we can do that is a bigger campaign? Because really, it's about the day-to-day versus your big campaigns. Your big campaigns are moments in the year, but your community is every day.
Creators turned brand founders have certainly become a lot more common than they were 10 years ago. And I think they have a very unique and interesting insight, right? They see both sides of the equation in a way that most people don't. And so we've had the privilege of sitting now with two of the best examples of this, and Mariana Hewitt, the co-founder of cult favorite skincare brand Summer Fridays. She's got over 1 million fans on Instagram, and skincare expert Susan Yara, who built a YouTube community of over 1.5 million subscribers. Naturium just got acquired for $355 million by e.l.f., and Summer Fridays is one of the hottest brands of the whole industry, consistently ranks in the top 10, and I would expect to get acquired for possibly even more. So let's listen to their advice on working with creators and building a following to become a successful creator themselves.
And then I think being an influencer, I hope, has made us an easier brand to work with, because when we're coming up with, you know, the campaign or the one sheet that we send a brand, we give them a little bit more creative freedom. And I think when you're working with influencers, if you just want them to reiterate what you're saying, like, you may as well just run digital marketing ads and do it yourself. But if you want to work with an influencer, they know what works best for their audience. So give them creative freedom to speak about the product. There's maybe like a talking point you want to include, but give them freedom to share the product that they think works best for their audience in a way that they think their audience will resonate with it. And so, and I think telling an influencer ahead of time, like, hey, I really want to work with you because we need a boost in sales, or we really want to work with you because we want really great content. Then the influencer knows going into when they're doing the job for you, how they will photograph or speak about the product. Because if you just want a pretty picture and that's why you're working with me, I will share it differently than if you just want like pure sales, because that's a different type of content. So I think just giving them creative freedom and then also, you know, letting them know what your goals are ahead of time is really helpful for a successful campaign.
I think like the big thing to remember is that people, when they follow you, they're following you because they either feel like they're learning something from you, they're being entertained by you, they feel like they connect with you in some way. So if you are, you know, if I look at my following, a lot of my following is like Asian moms or Latina moms, right? Like they feel like they connect. I actually realized recently there are a lot of people of mixed biological race, right, that follow me as well, because we all have this very unique perspective. So people are actually, you know, like, you know, they're seeing something that they connect with in you as the creator. So that's like number one, is to always remember that they follow you, right? Like you are the person that they are following, and there's a reason for that.
When we started over a decade ago, the word creator economy didn't even exist. And now we've watched it go from the sidelines to being main stage, to say the least. And I think looking very specifically at the platforms in this space, whether it's TikTok or Instagram or Reddit, is a fascinating way to learn more. So next up, you'll hear from TikTok's Adrian Layens, Instagram's Doug Weiss, and the CMO at Reddit, Roxy Young, on how their companies are building around this creator ecosystem.
Something that's kind of important to remember today is that the creator marketing landscape is a whole ecosystem that's really changing the face of marketing. And to be an effective marketer today, you really need to focus on how to be a great storyteller and how to connect natively and authentically with your consumers. And creators have really changed the voice and tone of what effective marketing looks like today. And so advertising is much more engaging, entertaining than it ever has been before. And the great thing about partnering with creators and investing in creator marketing is that as a brand, you don't need to master the messaging anymore. You can tell a creator what you're looking to achieve. You could tell 50 creators what you're looking to achieve at scale, and they can tell that story on your behalf in a way that will deeply resonate with their communities. And that really is the beauty of creator marketing. And brands who are partnering with creators are seeing really tremendous results. When we're talking about some of those KPIs, right? We're seeing that brands who are partnering with creators are experiencing a 26% lift in brand favorability, a 22% lift in purchase intent, and 71% of TikTok users say that a creator's authenticity is what motivates them to purchase from a brand. And so it is a full funnel strategy, top of funnel, middle funnel, all the way down to the purchase as well.
I think, no question, and I will fight anyone who disagrees with this, that like the emergence of creators and the importance of creators in driving purchasing decisions and in having influence over users is potentially one of the most important trends that have happened, you know, in the 21st century. But on the other hand, I think it's been really hard to understand where to place your investments, who to be working with, what types of formats, what platforms. So I think there's going to be a real big push, especially just very, you know, bluntly, in a world of potentially reduced marketing budgets, people are taking a much closer look at where they're spending and whether it's actually really driving impact. So I do think that that's going to be something that we will definitely see over the next, you know, we've already started to see, and we will continue to see. And what I think we hope is that in all of that, though, that we are the kind of the best platform to help creators be who they are, create the content that they want, and connect to the communities that they care about most. I think we very much see ourselves as that place where creators can, you know, if I have an hour of time, it makes more sense for me to invest that hour on Instagram than it does on TikTok, than it does on any other platform that may exist, because it gives me the value. And that value can mean a million different things. I get close conversations with my community. I'm able to build my community. I'm able to directly monetize. I'm able to indirectly monetize. I think this idea of like, how can we be the place where if you have an hour, if you have a day, if you have a month, it makes sense for you to invest that time with us. And so creating as many tools as possible, both, you know, in the app itself, but also in close collaboration with partners that really can make sure that A, you understand that value, B, you can access that value, and C, you can maximize that value.
Reddit is where you will find the people that are relevant, your target audience, where they are finding community, where they are forming opinions, and where they are taking action. And so our whole business model is we give a place for these communities to flourish and to thrive. And then we allow advertisers to tap into these communities so that they can achieve their business goals. And we have so many fantastic examples of advertisers across all different categories tapping into the Reddit communities so that they can achieve their business goals, whether that's more foot traffic or more leads or more downloads or more subscriptions. So many different kinds of brands and businesses have tapped into Reddit's passionate audience to achieve their business goals.
There are more tools, data, and models than there ever were before to measure the impact of your influencer marketing efforts, including our own. But it's still not a perfect science, and some things cannot be easily measured or tracked. Sometimes you just have to know that you're doing a really good job building a brand. We've been lucky to have some of the best brand marketers in the world on this show. So let's hear from Raisa, the Chief Brand Officer at Revolve, Angelique, the former VP of Marketing at Aloe Yoga, and Scott Sassa, the Chairman of Milk Makeup, about what they have to say about brand building.
And I think that's one of the things that I try to, you know, remind other marketers, you know, that ask if, you know, is influencer marketing worth it? Is influencer marketing, you know, an investment that we should be really looking at? And I think what a lot of people forget is that, or not forget, maybe like their approach is not what it should be, is that they want to equate every single post to drive revenue or a sale.
Yes.
And I think that that's just fundamentally from the start a wrong way to look at it. I think it's absolutely top of funnel marketing. And there's also different people that can do different things. I really look at, you know, a post as a billboard. And I think like if you post a billboard, you can't go to the advertiser and say, how much did I convert from this? It's all very high level, like impressions, right? And what's the CPM on that? And so I think for us, like that was one of the things that we got, you know, just the fundamentals of what influencers can do, I think has been such a what we kind of got right, I guess, is that, hey, like, let's try to broadcast what the brand is about and then see what happens. And also see what happens is not just one post. It's taken a long time to really figure out what that is.
Word of mouth and brand building is so, so crucial. And a lot of new D2C brands these days, you know, the ones that kind of like pop up and fizzle out or whatnot, they tend to forget that. They invest everything in hyper growth. It's all about acquisition, retargeting, and they forget about building a brand. I would say to those types of marketers that don't believe in both, right? Like, I'm a data first marketer and I don't hide that, right? But as you're building a brand, there's ways to track what that looks like. It might be uptick in UGC. It might be, you know, you're creating a health, a brand health study, brand lift study. You're looking at things like, what are inbound requests from some of these celebrities? Is media picking us up organically? In our case, all of it is organic. And if you don't invest in brand, if you don't invest in those relationships, and you don't invest in these community events or larger events like Aloe House, or you don't invest in building a community of, let's say, you know, we have clean and green skincare and body care, and it goes beyond just apparel or yoga equipment that we have. We truly are like a full holistic lifestyle brand. If we don't invest in some of those beauty associates or, you know, beauty experts, like, you're never going to grow and scale. No one's going to recommend you organically. So the way that we break it out is, you know, we track both sides, but we also understand the value in that brand lift and investing in brand. And it's not always going to show return right away, but for sure, I guarantee, Connor, if you start building like a brand health or brand lift study over that course of the year, you will see that upward traction. You're, you know, becoming a household name doesn't happen by growth or acquisition. It happens by investing in the brand.
In the old days, as you point out, you produce a bunch of ads, there's no ratings, no reviews, and you just force feed the thing and it shows up in the center aisle at the end cap of your supermarket and it's a hit, right? Well, today it's got to have that problem solving, you know, it's got to be useful, has to have good usability, but now it has to have this new thing, desirability, right? Mm-hmm. Because if, you know, with ratings, reviews, ingredients, that transparency, you can't produce bad products. What digital does today is it rewards greatness, but it punishes mediocrity. Bad is gone. And you know, like that's what you've got to do is you've got to create that demand where you'll crawl through glass to get something because there's too many options.
Brand building is a lot easier and more effective when your brand DNA is something that people can connect to and resonate with. Some of my favorite examples of this are how Dr. Brent Ridge and Josh built their brand Beekman 1802 around kindness. Now, inclusivity has always been at the heart of MAC Cosmetics DNA, which is what attracted their CMO, Ida, to the brand long before she joined the team.
When we started the company now 16 years ago, we always said we want to be a company that's here 200 years from now. And I think we would say we built the brand the old-fashioned way, like just really one neighbor at a time like that. We try to look at kindness as wellness. And we say kindness to skin, kindness to self, kindness to planet, kindness to community. I think the best way to we try to explain it to people is that with kindness, you know, when you give an act of kindness or someone gives you an act of kindness, that kind of glowy feeling you get inside, that warmth you get inside, that's not something that's just happening. That's a complex set of neurochemical reactions happening in your body. Dopamine's being released, serotonin's being released, cortisol levels are going down, and that's what's causing that feeling of euphoria. And guess what? All of those chemical changes are also impacting the microbiome of your skin. So even though we're talking about kindness and what it can do in the greater world, it's also having an impact on what we're doing from a scientific standpoint. And so cool. We really do believe that kindness is a really powerful thing on many, many levels.
For the first time in my life in beauty, whether it was for my hair or for my, you know, makeup, I felt like a brand was not looking at me like, oh, you know, sorry, like, we don't do shades for you because you're not worth our time or, you know, business or whatever it was. Like, I mean, the way it was coming across to me was just, I didn't matter, right? Like, and yeah, for Mac, yeah. I felt I mattered. And, you know, like today it feels so normal, but it yeah. wasn't. And that's been Mac since inception, like 37 years ago. They mm-hmm. were not... They're always very intentionally inclusive of all skin tones. You know, it's not something that they did because now it's politically correct or politically incorrect not to be. So, yeah, you know, yeah. it's just part of the DNA of the brand. I mean, for me, like the values of MAC, and I'm big about equity and brand equity when it comes to marketing. I think this is a big asset of the brand. And it's for me, like when I started to work at MAC, everybody I've met shared those values, value them, wear them as a badge on their, you know, black shirt, and, you know, are extremely passionate about it. Like, it's a culture, it's a point of view. It's something we believe in. It's not just a fad. It's not a trend. It's not a politically correct trait. It's not something we must do. It's something we always did.
It's at the core.
Yeah.
It's at the core. Yeah.
We've had so many world-class marketers and veteran entrepreneurs on this show. I'd like to thank anyone who's listened to the last 100 episodes of the podcast has essentially earned their MBA, at least in influencer marketing. Something a lot of our guests have emphasized is the importance of focus and prioritization. And I am a strong believer in that. And intentionally choosing a couple of key areas to focus on and doing those things really well, rather than trying to do everything, but doing none of it well, is honestly probably the most important key to success broadly. In the next section, Ken Landis, the co-founder of Bobbi Brown, Tula, and Dibs Beauty, all of which have seen unbelievable success, as well as Jew, the co-founder and CEO of Hero Cosmetics, which sold for $630 million, touch on this focused strategy when it comes to product development and distribution. Another key marketing strategy that's been a through line through many of our episodes is the power of storytelling. Katie Welch, the CMO of Rare Beauty, which is killing it, the number one brand we track in the entire category, says the secret to strong marketing program is a compelling and focused brand story. On the creator side, we had a great episode with Mark, the president of Mr. Beast, which is the biggest YouTube channel in America and fourth biggest in the world. And he talks about the importance of storytelling in Jimmy's content and how they even weave ad reads and sponsorship into the main plot of the video. So it becomes part of the story, right? It's just easier rather than being disruptive. And to close out this section on top marketing strategies, we'll hear from my good friends, Corey Marchisotto, the CMO at e.l.f., and Ashton Wall, who was the former head of marketing at ColourPop, also a number one brand at their time, on why they have a bias toward action and taking advantage of opportunities in real time before that moment passes.
So I think one of the biggest mistakes people make, and one of the, you know, one of my pet peeves, is on distribution and the distribution strategy. And I think that's really one of the core elements of what makes a successful brand. Quite often, I'll see, you know, someone will pitch me an idea on a beauty company, and one of my first questions will be, just, you know, what's your distribution strategy? And more often than not, they don't have one. They'll say, well, we'll see who comes along. And you know, I'm a big proponent of, it's not the amount of sales that you have, but the quality of sales you have. And anybody who knows me, who's worked with me, knows I have a mantra, which I use at least once a week with people, and it's called narrow and deep.
Yeah.
If I'm involved in an early stage company, I want it to start small and be relevant wherever you are, relevant in any distribution channel you're in, relevant in any door you're in if you're going into traditional retail.
I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs and founders who it's really easy to get distracted in the beginning because, like, okay, your product's doing well and you got like this retailer who wants you and that retailer, and you have like, you know, 5 to 10 other opportunities in front of you to expand your product line. But I think, yeah, so back to your question, like the focus is so critical because you don't have all the time in the world. You don't have the resources. You don't have the people. And it's so much better. And actually my investor, Trevor, he had made a really good quote, which is that do something on a small scale. Like for us, it was Amazon. So do something small on a small scale, but something that's repeatable and scalable. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, like we did the patch, one patch on Amazon, then we did more patches on Amazon. Then we took that same model to Target. So we started with one patch and then we like did many other patches. And then we started adding other SKUs and we just started kind of, it was like a rinse and repeat across other channels. And so I think having that kind of like that focus is critical because otherwise, I mean, it's just so easy to get distracted and to like do 1,000 things and do none of them well. And so definitely, I think having the ability to prioritize is a superpower as a founder.
I think today's marketing is so fundamentally different than what yesterday's marketing used to be that you have to understand the power of a brand message, the power of storytelling to then usher that big idea through and to sort of cut through the noise. And like, how does that big idea land and resonate across all these different touch points that the consumer, community, individual, human, whomever, that they have, like whatever's taking their attention. And if you don't have them all threaded together, like a strong story, like what we would do at Weber Shandwick, it doesn't break through. And then it just becomes you're just doing a bunch of stuff. And I think brands very easily fall into the trap of doing a bunch of stuff because there's a lot of stuff to do. There's a lot of shiny pennies. Correct. Yeah. And now I'm not saying don't try it. Like definitely try the new things. But when you try it, make sure your brand comes through and resonates. Make sure your big idea, whatever that idea may be, like how does it manifest on this platform or this idea or this thing? And that's the secret, I think, to really strong marketing programs.
Within a video, we'll do a brand read. And that may be like a 30 to 45 second talking about Shopify and the benefits of you can launch your own store. And, you know, and Shopify, terrific partner of ours. We planted a flag on a mountain, I think, that nobody had climbed in Antarctica. It was really fun. They've been a really great partner. But a lot of people would do reads that feel like ad breaks. The viewer is conditioned. There's a lot of cues and it literally podcasts even change. Even when the host is reading on a podcast, you can tell it's a pre-record because there's like a slightly different audio pitch or something.
Yeah.
And you just know to hit the skip button. It's literally built into every interface of skip. And so knowing that, it's like, how do we make it so that these are not skippable because you're so invested in the story that's going on that you just need to see what's going on in the background? So in Squid Game, that was an elimination event using the dodgy game, and they were throwing them, and it was, you were literally watching people fall out. You were now invested in the number of people that were left in Squid Game, but still Jimmy's talking about Brawl Stars, like this mobile game, and people are saying, thank you, Brawl Stars. And it's funny, I have kids and they still to this day, they'll throw dice or something and they'll say, thank you, Brawl Stars, right before they throw it. Just kind of as a joke, but for good luck. That was what we sort of worked in the story. Yeah. So anyway, I think high retention ads, it's something we really do specialize on so that it is not an interruptive ad. It's so weaved into the story.
I've always had this bias for action because I understand the importance of the now. And if you dream it, you have to do it. And a dream without execution is empty. It's just a dream. Mm-hmm. And if you wait too long, the moment has passed. Timing matters. If you wait too long, it kills the dream. And I think the other part, Connor, is usually when you have that dream and that fire in the belly to move something forward, if you have to start pushing paper around, if you have to start presenting it to multiple stakeholders, if you have to start driving it up and then everybody wants their comments and they have to put their ego stamp on it, by the time you're able to bring that dream to reality, one, it looks very different.
Yep.
Two, you've lost your passion for it.
Yep.
And three, quite honestly, the timing has passed. And when I think about ELF and what we were able to do on TikTok, on Twitch, and you know, even us jumping into Clubhouse and being early adopters, it matters.
Yep.
And that timing gave us a real competitive advantage. And if I think about COVID, you know, how grateful am I that we spent so much time before we even knew COVID existed on building our digital strength at speed? Because when COVID hit, we were already entering from a position of strength where yeah. others were scrambling to try to figure out, how do I get on TikTok? Because now everybody's on TikTok and everybody's on their phones and we haven't figured out how to get digital yet. So emergency Corey, the lightning bolt, you know, lucky that we had that bias for action to drive all that stuff forward.
And that is one of my philosophies of marketing, right? That the magic yeah. happens in real time and you can't overplan it. Yeah. I know a lot of people would disagree with me, but I have felt that
marketing calendars are a year out.
Exactly. Yeah. Or more.
And product launches are 2 years out.
Or more. Yeah. And people want to know, what is your vision for 2024? Like, fuck, I don't know. Do you? I feel no. like you're lying if you do.
I know what I'm doing tomorrow.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing tomorrow. I have a loose idea of next week, but who knows? It could change.
Yeah.
And I think that is really the magic of Laura and the magic of ColourPop.
Yeah.
And I hope that we preserve that. Of course, we're getting a little further out with our planning.
Of course.
And when I say a little further out, Connor, I mean like 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But even that can change. And it goes back to social listening too. I mean, that's something yeah. that's so important to us, is what are people saying in real time? Because we have the operational capacity to react to that.
Yeah.
Not many other people can say that.
Can't build a strong brand without first building a strong team. We've talked to so many incredible executives on this show about their leadership philosophies. They've all highlighted that in order to cultivate a positive company culture, you need to treat your employees with respect and empathy, trust their ability to do their job well, and assure them that failure is a welcome part of the success. Here are a few of my favorite leadership philosophies from guests, including Anna Maria Hanau, the CMO of US Consumer Channel at Microsoft, Toto Haba, the SVP of Global Marketing at Benefit Cosmetics, Jui Wong, the CEO of Olaplex, and Ruben Kranza, who's now the group CEO of Amica and Ava NYC.
I would say for you to be a successful leader today and for the future, there are three concepts that I try to actually apply every single day. So the first C is compassion. And compassion is all about empathy, but the definition of compassion is empathy plus action. And I like that definition a lot because it's not only about understanding the other side, either be the consumer, the customer, a coworker, someone that works for you. It's not just understanding, but it's what you do with that understanding, how you turn that understanding into action. So I love that concept because what I have seen is you need to understand, you need to have lots of empathy. But then if your decisions are not made on that understanding, but what is convenient for the company, then empathy becomes useless. So that's why I like compassion a lot, because it's understanding is lots of empathy, but it's turning that empathy into action and is championing that understanding and being honest and truth to that understanding so that your actions are honoring those things that you have learned. So the first one is, as I said, compassion. The second one is curiosity. I would say for me, the brain is a muscle that you have to keep on training every day. So it's the conviction really that you're never a finished product. And what you see here, particularly what I have lived in the last 25 years, if I wouldn't have been curious, I wouldn't have been able to make it to where I am right now. And I don't think I will be able to make it to the next 5 years or even the next 6 months. Because if you think about AI, the fact that I joined the company and the AI revolution hit 2 months after, you have to stay curious. You have to keep this open mind. You have to become a lifelong learner to really be successful. Because if you believe that you're an end product, that you have learned it all, then you become very quickly obsolete. So I would say curiosity is very important and is about exercising your brain every single day. We're in constant evolution. Nothing is really constant in the world anymore. So we need to be curious and to remain curious all the time. And then the last C is about courage. And the definition of courage that I use is that courage is not the absence of fear, but it's more the conviction that action is more important. Every single time that you're making a decision, you need to be courageous to lean in and to say, okay, I'm going to do something here. And what I have seen is that sometimes in the absence of courage, if you are waiting for the 99.9% certainty of what is going to happen, of all the information that is available, then you start being in a lethargic mode that what's happening is opportunities are just going by. So you need to be informed, right? So you need to be intelligent as to when to lean in. But at certain point, you just need to lean in and face the consequences of your actions. And if it doesn't work, say, okay, at least I'm learning. Because fear is always going to be there. You will never get to a stage where you're like, I'm 100% certain that the results are going to be 100% what I'm expecting. There is always risk. So for me, courage is important, is to know when to pivot, is to know when to say, I know enough, there is risk, but this is sufficient. And then I will lean in and I will just assume the consequences of whatever happens. And I think as far as those consequences, you take it with a growth mindset so that it's constructive. And if you fail, at least you're learning. There's always a gain and way more than if you just stay in pause and do nothing.
At Benefit, you know, I start the year setting off some global priorities for the team. And just the way I'm wired, I always try to set a specific KPI on whether or not we're reaching, you know, that objective. And for the innovation objective that we have, the broad goal I set was we have to be failing 75% of the time in order to be successful for that and succeeding just 25%, with the thought that if you're not failing enough, you're not trying to reach high enough. And I also just wanted to try to instill a culture of being okay to talk about our failures as a company, because I know sometimes when you work on an international role, people just like to tell you about their successes, you know, that they have and not be as open to the failure. So that's one of the reasons I did that.
I realized very quickly, when you hire the talent, let them do what they do best, but be there to provide a net for them should they fall. And let them know that. Let them know, look, I'm not going to throw you under the bus, but I need you to stretch yourself. I need you to deliver on the goals that we have set together. But at the same time, know that if you stretch yourself and you feel, find that you are failing, good news travel fast, but bad news better travel faster. So those are the kind of key tenets that I tell my team members, because at the end of the day, I will go after a problem to find a solution and not find the person to get rid of, because, you know, to kind of blame someone, because at the end, it all stops with me, right? Somebody once told me, you point a finger at one person, five are pointing back at you, basically. So you are responsible.
You know, you hear the wives' tales, you get more flies with sugar, or you attract more, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
it's true. I mean, if you create an environment that is that's challenging, it's fun, but there's respect, and respect isn't just being nice. Respect is also having the courage to have tough conversations, having the courage to hear tough feedback from your employees to you as the leader. What I found was those environments created much more acceleration than the other, right? And so part of it is, kind of when I finally got to a place where I was leading an organization, I was like, well, I want to be a member of an organization that I would want to be a part of, even if I wasn't the leader of that organization, right? And so it's always been about that.
And finally, and most importantly, we've had some badass women on this show. To wrap up the 100th episode compilation celebration, I want to highlight a few of those women who are true trailblazers in their industry and have no doubt helped pave the way for more young women to achieve similar success in their careers. Those women are Janet Gerwich, the founder of Laura Mercier, an operating partner at Advent International, Jesse Draper, the founding partner of Halogen Ventures, a VC firm that invests exclusively in female-founded businesses, and finally, Danessa Myricks, founder of the makeup brand that carries her name and who works so hard to be the change she wished to see in the beauty industry. Enjoy, guys.
I always tried to excel. I tried to always know what my competition was doing. I tried to be the very best. And I would say that to a man or woman.
Yep.
But it's interesting, when Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, came out, I read it and I was thinking, well, I mean, I leaned in. When I read it, I could think of times at Foley's, again, only woman on the board of merchants at that time, that I maybe didn't. I maybe didn't lean in. Yeah. And then in private equity, everyone that I've been working with went to Harvard and, you know, graduated special, you know, they were all at the top of the class, et cetera. And I think you have to think, I'm here because I bring a certain expertise. And I really say to women, lean in.
Yep.
You know, lean in, have confidence in what you know and what you think, because really that's what a board is. Everyone should, you know, bring what they're thinking. And that's why diverse boards are so important. But I would just say, excel. I say that to man or woman, best you can, because that's how you win.
I was like, I can't be the only woman feeling this way. And I could not believe, I mean, it got like a million impressions in about a month. It blew up. It's still quoted in every major publication because we backed it up with a lot of data on the returns that women have and how women raise half as much capital often, but they make a dollar more. They double the return and they actually often exit a year earlier. Their capital is much more efficient. And since then, so many studies have come out. There were some back then that we referenced, but so many more. People are constantly sending me these great studies, just like on making sure there's a female in the founding team and better performance overall. The sad thing is I'm still out there fundraising and I still come across people. I feel like part of my mission in life is to explain to people like, no, this is not charity. This is a for-profit opportunity. And actually companies with a female in the founding team perform better, and companies with diversity overall. You know, you can't talk about women without also talking about, I think about diversity of age, race, and gender every single day. And I want to make sure each of my companies is thinking that way also.
There's a responsibility to be the change you want to see. And so, like, for me, when I think about what was missing for me in my journey just as a woman, my journey in beauty as a Black woman, all of those feelings that I felt when I couldn't just do simple things like match my skin, right?
Yep.
When I could never see somebody who was a reflection of me. All of those things, they resonate with you. They mean something, right? I think about all the conversations that I've had. I mean, I had the blessing to like travel all around the world and really talk to people and hear their voices and hear what's meaningful to them. When you realize that there's a person, a real live person at the other end of the things that you're making, I think it changes your perspective on how you create, how you communicate, different things become important to you, just everything changes. I agree completely with what you're saying. It's like when you focus on the people and how people feel, and you just put your energy into making people just feel good, feel like they're a part of things, feeling like they belong, you create a different kind of boomerang effect, right? And it's not like you're doing it for that purpose. You're doing it because that's how you want to feel. And by putting it out there, it just continues to come back around. Just a new way of thinking about beauty.
If you made it this far, thank you so much for listening. Not just to this 100th episode, but also to the 99 that came before it. And if you listen to those 99 episodes, every single one of them, shoot me a message. I'm going to send you a bottle of champagne or something nice. We could not have done this without you guys, and we can't wait to continue making the show even bigger and better. On to 200.
Be a friend, tell a friend, and subscribe. Earned by Creator IQ. Creator IQ is your all-in-one solution to grow, manage, scale, and measure your influencer marketing program. Ready to unlock the power of the creator economy? Get started with a demo today at creatoriq.com.